Blog Talk Radio.
If it's Sunday, it's Wrestling Night in America here on PWTorchDailyCast.com. Good Sunday evening for March 8th, 2020. I am Pro Wrestling Torch columnist Greg Parks, and this is the Post-Elimination Chamber Wrestling Night in America here on PWTorchDailyCast.com, the last big stopover before WrestleMania takes place 28 days from now, just 4 weeks. So we will run down the Elimination Chamber card. We will take your phone calls. We will take your emails. You can reach us by phone at 515-605-9345. That's the number to call if you'd like to listen live or if you'd like to make a comment or have a question about tonight's show. If you'd like to do that, remember to press 1 on your dial pad. If you can't stay up at the late hour, that's fine. We've set up an email for people like you, WNIALivecast@gmail.com. I've got about 4 emails sitting in the queue right now. My promise to you is I will get to all of them during the show. So that I can tell you. Elimination Chamber tonight came to us from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. On the pre-show, or the kickoff show, as WWE has branded it, the Viking Raiders defeated Curt Hawkins and Zack Ryder in the opener. That helped establish the Viking Raiders were there. It perhaps helped them get a little better reception when they came out later on in the show to help out, but we'll get to that a little later on when we review that. 7 matches on the card proper. It started with Daniel Bryan defeating Drew Gulak with the Yes Lock. I know a lot of people seem to be unhappy with Daniel Bryan's position on the card relative to WrestleMania season as it's coming up. You know, you would like a star the level of Daniel Bryan to be doing something maybe more important than fighting with Drew Gulak, who has, since moving to SmackDown in the latest pre-Fox draft, hasn't really done much other than anger Braun Strowman, I think, at one point. So to see Bryan wrestling him, it does raise some eyebrows of fans of WWE and more specifically fans of Daniel Bryan. And Bryan's whole odyssey since his return from retirement has been interesting. You know, it's been interesting to see. I'm sure if you're a fan of Bryan, again, you're no fan of how he's been used. But the one thing I will say is it certainly has been a journey for him since his return. The announcers made sure to hit home that Bryan has not been the same since his feud with The Fiend. That is interesting that they keep bringing that up, I guess, for a couple reasons. It explains maybe why Daniel Bryan is started at the bottom again on SmackDown. It does help establish The Fiend as someone who can change you, if not permanently, then for the long term, although it has not been established through others. I guess they've talked a little bit about it relating to Seth Rollins and his heel turn, but they have not hit it home as much as with Daniel Bryan, and they really could with Seth Rollins. This whole Messiah character could be born out of the feud with The Fiend, and you can really tell a story about the folks who have encountered The Fiend, who have feuded with him and wrestled him, and how it's changed them. Even going back to Finn Balor in NXT, I mean, he's a totally different person now than he was when he fought The Fiend on the main roster. Of course, I'm not sure if that would be beneficial to his NXT character to mention that main roster run, since he was largely unsuccessful against The Fiend. But yeah, it is kind of interesting to just throw out there. And I wonder if that will continue. You know, I wonder if in the build-up to John Cena versus The Fiend, they will use those examples of people who have been changed by The Fiend. And John Cena is one guy who hasn't changed much in the last decade plus of his character. So that's something that they could bring up, and the possibility of Cena changing. For as little as he's around, he's still an important part of WWE's history, especially the recent history. So that would be I'm interested to see if that plays a part in Cena versus The Fiend. Match number 2 on the Elimination Chamber card was Andrade defeating Humberto Carrillo to retain the United States title. He used a handful of tights, mugged for the camera as he did so, which was kind of fun. But it was a good match. So was the opener. I mean, as you'd expect, Drew Gulak versus Daniel Bryan was a good match. Andrade versus Humberto Carrillo was a good match. You get the sense that some combination of Andrade, Carrillo, and Angel Garza, perhaps even, will be a part of a WrestleMania match. I think they've earned it. I think even a three-way for the United States Championship, maybe with Zelina Vega in the middle between Andrade and Angel Garza, given her association with both men. I think that would be an interesting play as well. So I'm hoping that's the case. I think they deserve an opportunity at WrestleMania, and I think it will be one of the more athletic contests on the card if it were to take place. Match number three was the first Elimination Chamber match pitting John Morrison and The Miz against Heavy Machinery, New Day, The Usos, Lucha House Party, and Bobby Roode and Dolph Ziggler for the SmackDown tag titles held by Miz and Morrison. Miz and Morrison retained their titles here in this match. This match had a lot of ups and downs, and I think the consensus seemed to be on social media, which, by the way, you can follow me at Greg M. Parks on Twitter. On social media, the consensus, which I agree with here in this case, was that the highs were really high, the lows were low. There was a lot of high spots in this match, a lot of creative moments in this match, and there was also a lot of downtime. There wasn't a lot that was interesting in between those spots. And I think part of it is, you know, the tag team division on SmackDown, well, the tag team division period in WWE, but perhaps especially on SmackDown, has been a second-class citizen for a long time. And to ask the fans to invest a significant amount of their attention and time out of a pay-per-view for some of these teams that fans know little about or just don't care about, I think it's asking a lot. I think you saw that in the reaction, although the reaction to the entire card by the Philadelphia fans was a big yawn, it seemed to be, or at least that's how it came across on television. But The Miz and John Morrison retaining their titles here, heading into WrestleMania, since that's where we have to look now. We have to look at these results through the lens of what does this mean for WrestleMania, partially because that's the next big show and is the big show of the year, but partially because almost every match on this show had some sort of WrestleMania-related ramifications to them. So if you look at it through that lens, The Miz and John Morrison, Heavy Machinery has been featured often with Otis. He's a character that the writers seem to like. Vince McMahon likely has a fascination with. So is it enough to get them into a tag team title match, or do they do something else as featured players on WrestleMania? You got the Usos and New Day. They've always got to be in the conversation for the tag titles. I think any combination of those against Ms. Morrison would probably be pretty good if Ms. and Morrison are still the champions at WrestleMania. Match number four, Aleister Black versus AJ Styles in a no qualification match. This is where the show started off hot with the first two matches. The third match was okay, and I think it kind of went downhill from here. Not so much in the match quality, but just the reaction from the fans was almost silence to a lot of these. Black versus Styles, Black getting the victory in the no DQ match. Undertaker came out, chokeslammed AJ Styles. The no DQ stip was pointless, I guess, aside from the fact that they needed a way for Undertaker to cost AJ Styles this match without trying to bump the ref, because they've been pretty good about limiting those lately. And, you know, they wanted to set up Taker and Styles to continue that build to WrestleMania through this match and, possibly put Aleister Black behind the eight ball with the club at ringside, knowing that in a no disqualification environment, they would be involved. But other than that, I mean, the no DQ stip didn't really significantly in this match. Match was not kind of what you imagine with AJ Styles versus Aleister Black, and I brought this point up on Twitter. I think I brought it up before, but, you know, we were kind of, when AJ Styles was champion on SmackDown, whether it was the feud with AJ Styles or the feud with Shinsuke Nakamura, it was almost like, you know, this match was okay. I see it being better. Maybe the follow-up will be better. Maybe the rematch will be better. And that's how I felt watching this. Realizing that unless it's on TV, there's not going to be a rematch on pay-per-view because Styles is going to be headed for The Undertaker at WrestleMania. And I think, you know, given the amount of time we say that about AJ Styles matches, perhaps it's time we take a step back and look at AJ Styles with his age and wear and tear, that, you know, maybe what we're expecting out of him every month is just too much at this point. And maybe this slowed down pace, the more psychological match that he has, maybe that's who he is now, and maybe that should be our expectation rather than expecting something and constantly being disappointed by that. Match number five, the Street Profits defeated Rollins and Murphy to retain the Raw Tag Team titles. Kevin Owens came out through the crowd with some popcorn to observe the match, and at ringside came over the barrier and watched, and clearly they're building the Seth Rollins versus Kevin Owens for WrestleMania, which is fine. I think it's a good use of both guys. This match was a good match. Again, not any heat to speak of from the Philadelphia fans. In fact, I don't ever remember the Street Profits getting such a lack of reaction before. But this was a match you see on Raw every week. And the thing is, with Raw getting better, I think that means the game for the pay-per-views needs to be upped as well. I mean, you could get away with these kind of matches. Raw was a slog and when they didn't have a lot of good matches, and these matches would then stand out on pay-per-view above what you saw on Raw. But when you're getting the quality of the show that we've been getting on Raw lately, including the quality of matches, that means you need to step up either in the ring or something on pay-per-view to make those stand out more from what you see every Monday night. But the Street Profits, Raw Tag Team Champions. So we look at the landscape on Raw. I think the Revival would be a good opponent for the Street Profits, but they're on SmackDown, and I mean, they weren't even in the SmackDown Elimination Chamber match, which should tell you about where the Revival stand in WWE right now and what I think WWE thinks their chances of re-signing the Revival are. So, not a lot. I mean, the Viking Raiders possibly could play a part in the Street Profits and the Raw Tag Team Championship match at WrestleMania. Street Profits right now kind of feel like a pre-show match. You know, you got to imagine three or four pre-show matches, maybe one of the Battle Royals on there, and perhaps one of these tag title matches as well. Match number six was the 3-on-1 handicap match for the Intercontinental Championship. This belt changed hands as Braun Strowman lost. Sami Zayn picking up the win and thus will be the Intercontinental Champion. We'll have to see if it'll be Freebird rules for the IC title and whether Shinsuke Nakamura, Cesaro, and Sami Zayn all get to defend the title or if it's just Sami Zayn. Zayn getting a victory. He was able to successfully escape Braun Strowman for much of this match and ended up picking the victory up when Nakamura and Cesaro helped him. So presumably Braun Strowman versus Sami Zayn one-on-one at WrestleMania where Strowman finally gets his hands on Sami Zayn. But this was okay. They did what they could. This was somewhat entertaining, I guess, especially compared to some of the other stuff we had on the card. Sami Zayn with his antics is pretty entertaining. It's sad in some ways to see what he's become because he is such a talented wrestler and he can be so more than the clown that he's portrayed as on SmackDown. But at least he's entertaining, and I guess that's a step up from what could be. And then in the main event, Shayna Baszler winning the opportunity to face Becky Lynch for the Raw Women's Championship at WrestleMania, outlasting Liv Morgan, Ruby Riott, Natalya, and Asuka, as well as Sarah Logan. So I thought this was going to go one of two ways. I thought Shayna Baszler would be one of the first two entrants, and she would just absolutely plow through everyone one-on-one and win it in dominating fashion. The other option I thought was she would be the last one out of the pod. Everybody else would still be in there. She would still dominate very quickly, dominate everybody, and be the last one standing. They kind of met in the middle. She was actually the fourth one out after Sarah Logan, Ruby Riott, Natalya, and Liv. I got to make sure I'm counting right. Sarah Logan, Ruby Riott, Natalya, and then Baszler was out. And she made quick work of Logan, Ruby, and Natalya. Liv Morgan came out, and I think they seem to be building, and I thought they built well to Asuka versus Baszler in that standoff. You know, Baszler was the presumptive winner of this by a wide margin, I think, and really the only person in the field who I think people could buy as having a legitimate shot at outlasting Baszler was Asuka. So it made sense to have Asuka be that final hill that Baszler had to climb before she won, and she did so, and I thought the Philly crowd was booing Baszler. I don't know if they were booing her because she's a heel. I don't know if they were booing her because they didn't like the match and they didn't like this as the end of the night, of a night that they weren't really invested in, it didn't seem like. And but frankly, WWE didn't seem all that invested in it. You look at the wrestlers who were not on this card, from Roman Reigns to Brock Lesnar, especially the people who are going to be major players at WrestleMania. No Goldberg, no John Cena, no Fiend. So there were some major players left off this pay-per-view. No major men's title matches were on the line. The SmackDown women's title was not on the line. The Raw women's title was not on the line. So this very much felt like a B show. But, you know, when you're heading into WrestleMania, I guess that's sort of the case. You know, if you've got the field at WrestleMania set and you like what you've got, then this kind of pay-per-view, whether it's Elimination Chamber, whether it's any kind of secondary pay-per-view in the spot between the Royal Rumble and WrestleMania, it does kind of feel like a placeholder. You know, you want to get in, get out, no injuries, no major matches at WrestleMania put in danger by any kind of injury. So it is interesting. We'll have to see. We'll track that and, you know, WrestleMania coming down the pike very soon. So, again, 515-605-9345 is the number to call. If you'd like to listen or talk, make sure to press 1. If you'd like to make a comment, and wnialivecast@gmail.com is where you can go to email us. And our first email is from JB from Detroit. He says, "Hi, Greg. It's JB from Detroit. Hi, JB. What do you make of this year's build to the Elimination Chamber and looking forward WrestleMania? Lacey Evans and Sheamus declared for Elimination Chamber matches that never even came to fruition. Meanwhile, I feel as if Roman Goldberg and Cena Fiend were thrown together right before Super Showdown when Vince realized Fiend Roman probably wouldn't work and they'd only get one Mania match out of it." Well, I commented on the build to Elimination Chamber. I think that's right. It did seem to be like Fiend and Roman Reigns was the plan until it wasn't. So I can totally see how that felt thrown together, and it probably was. That's why it felt that way. So, but you know what? We've still got a month till WrestleMania. Some of the other big matches had been built for a while. You know, Becky Lynch versus Baszler, even going back to their interactions at Survivor Series, has been built pretty well, all things considered, for Baszler not being on the main roster all that long. You know, Seth Rollins, Kevin Owens is continuing that arc. So, yes, the major matches were thrown together at the last minute, but that always seems to happen at WrestleMania season. You know, this is no longer the show where they build all year to get to this point and blow everything off. It's just kind of, I don't want to say it's built like any other pay-per-view because it's not that either, but I think we need to stop being surprised that sometimes Mania matches feel like, especially even the big ones, feel like they're being put together at the last minute because that's just how it happens. So, yeah, I agree, JB. So let's go to the phones. 478, this is Darrell from Georgia. He's going to kick us off tonight. Darrell, thank you for calling tonight. Good to hear from you. What do you think of Elimination Chamber?
How you doing today, Greg?
Doing well, thanks.
Elimination Chamber tonight, to me, was the particular type of wrestling show. It was just a show full of wrestling. I wish they would have built that up more. But it was just a show full of wrestling. Now, to come at you with it today, my question to you today will be about this. Since Shayna Baszler should be the first person in men's and women to win 5 straight matches in a dominating factor like that, and we know we heard speculations about Vince not liking her, but obviously he has to like her to give her this first opportunity type of thing. How did you feel about her going through everybody in such a dominant factor? And how do you think this build up to that match without them having Becky coming out in the end of that match and setting up some type of angle or doing something like that?
I think she had to be dominant for a couple of reasons. First of all, she's facing Becky Lynch, who you could argue is the biggest star, at least full-time star, in WWE. And a lot of the audience is only somewhat familiar with her. You know, the NXT audience does not always cross over with the Raw and main roster audience. So, yeah, they saw Baszler at Survivor Series, but a lot of people hold Becky Lynch in high regard as the top star in WWE. So if you're someone new coming in and facing the top star in WWE for the title at WrestleMania, I think fans need to see you as dominant, so they believe that the champion may be vulnerable. So I thought they had to make Baszler dominant for that reason, but I also think they had to make her dominant because, quite frankly, the crowd in that Elimination Chamber match was not strong. You know, Ruby Riott just come back from injury. She hasn't really been involved in anything really substantial. Liv Morgan had the thing with Lana, and then that dissipated very quickly, and she has never been portrayed as a top threat. Same with Sarah Logan. Natalya is kind of back and forth, and then Asuka, obviously, she's been dominant, but she's been in a tag team, and that's where she's been and where she's plied her trade for the last several months, aside from a Royal Rumble rematch with Becky Lynch. So I think for that reason, Baszler needed to be dominant too, because there were wrestlers in that match that could be sacrificed, and they needed to be to put Baszler over, and they were.
Yes, sir. And I also believe they gave Asuka a little bit more because they built up to her coming in and stuff like that. So, you know, they tried to save her, but they sacrificed everybody else, which you should at that opportune time.
Yeah.
Now, coming forward to all the other stuff that was going on, like with the IC title match, I understand giving Sami Zayn the IC title because of his pesky ways and stuff like that. Do you see that as a rematch or something coming up in Mania or something like that? Or do you see him doing some type of screwiness where he may even, since they consider this as the, I forgot what they said. They said artist faction or some type of stuff where they naming the whole faction behind Shinsuke. But, you know, Sami is the one who went. Do you see him presenting that ad and using it as a way to bring more heat his way?
Yeah, I do see it as a rematch. I see it as a Sami Zayn versus Braun Strowman singles match at WrestleMania because Braun never really got his hands on Sami. And they keep building to that. That was the story. Sami Zayn cut a backstage promo prior to this match, and it was, you know, Braun may have gotten his hands on Cesaro. He may have gotten his hands on Nakamura, but he never got his hands on me. That was Sami Zayn. And, you know, with the way he won and with the fact that Strowman didn't really get any kind of damage done to Sami Zayn on the show tonight, I think they're going to pay off that at WrestleMania. And that could be a really quick match at WrestleMania with Strowman perhaps getting his revenge, finally getting his hands on Sami Zayn there and winning the IC title back.
Okay, okay. And I didn't mind what they did with AJ tonight. I know you were speaking on earlier about AJ slowing down and stuff like that, but that's the typical thing, and you don't want AJ to do what he used to do because I think today in WWE, after him beating John Cena and people like that, they consider him as a base to their show if they have to potentially get somebody to come up and be someone who they need to carry the title or give a title match, and he is the one with the most credibility. I understand that. So, with that being said, with what they gave you tonight, do you see a Undertaker tag team with Aleister Black versus the OC? I feel like having that happen, you give multiple people more out of having Undertaker there, and you draw more attention to multiple people instead of just a one-on-one match with two older guys who maybe AJ in a few years, like he said, he's retiring. So, you know, giving somebody like Aleister Black that exposure.
Are you saying it at WrestleMania, Taker and Black versus the OC?
Yes.
Well, everything Taker is leading in the direction of Styles being involved. So I think it's got to be Styles, you know, and given his close proximity to the OC, I don't really see another tag team partner who could step in with AJ and face Aleister Black and Undertaker. I think Black and Undertaker make kind of an interesting idea for a tag team, and it would save Taker from having to do any kind of long match. You know, and you wonder about AJ Styles. You know, the first thing that goes through your mind is AJ Styles. Oh, yeah, he'll be a great opponent for Taker. He'll fly around for Taker and create movement for him. But then you watch matches like this with Styles, and you're like, gee, is he still capable of that sort of thing where he can really fly around and make Taker look good? So, you know, that's when you start thinking of maybe a tag match. But I don't think it would be the OC. I think it would have to be something physically involving Styles, given the way the direction is heading with Undertaker and Styles, and Taker, you know, beating Styles at Super Showdown and then, you know, costing him the match against Aleister Black here. I think it's got to be against Styles.
I get that. But just going off of the, like, the promo that he gave before the match, saying that, you know, he always going to have somebody with him and stuff like that. That's why I was saying 3-on-2 match between the OC and Undertaker. It just gives so much exposure. It gives exposure to AJ, the OC, and it also, who I think could benefit the most out of it, is somebody like Aleister Black. If he get the head nod from the Undertaker, maybe even taking the pin in that match, and Undertaker allowing him to take in the pin, passing on whatever rub that he has left, maybe does wonders for him and just for him, period, since we always saying, where are they going with him? What are they trying to do with him? And you can possibly give him some type of direction after that match when you knowing that you're coming up with a match with Drew versus Brock Lesnar. And you're going to have to potentially build somebody up to potentially take on Drew, maybe SummerSlam or a little bit after. You know, that could start to build to Aleister Black.
Yeah, and, you know, I think it's worth discussing. I think it's worth throwing out there that, you know, Black and Taker would kind of make an interesting tandem. And, you know, with Undertaker's physical condition, how much is he going to be able to do? That's, I think, fair to ask. And, you know, but I think it's, you know, Taker has earned the status to be able to tell WWE what he's comfortable with. And if he doesn't think he can get a singles match out of AJ Styles, maybe he'll go to them and say, you know, tag match is where it's at. And the pieces are there. You know, Durrell, as I said, the pieces are there that if they wanted to tomorrow start building a tag match with Taker and Black against Styles and the OC, they could do it and they could get there pretty easily. But they also have the option for the singles match as well.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And you could also make two matches out of it by letting Aleister Black trying to get some type of revenge from the OC and something like that. So, yeah, they got different ways that they can go into it from there on. Now, coming from this moment forward, we've gone through Elimination Chamber. We have the three matches and stuff like that. I think SmackDown as a show, period, they don't have the most matches coming up out of this, and they don't have the most clear shows. You were speaking about Bryan. You don't know where he's going for Mania. And, you know, a lot of fans will be upset if he don't get a match on Mania or something like that. You don't know where you're going with the tag team. When do you see SmackDown going with everything that they have? Right now, they only have two big matches in their eyes with Roman Reigns and Goldberg and The Fiend and John Cena. So where do you feel like they're going with the other matches, like the tag team division? Where are they going with Bryan and stuff like that?
Yeah. Well, I spoke a little earlier about where I think they could go for the tag division. And, you know, we talked about Sami Zayn versus Braun Strowman. That would be kind of in the pecking order on SmackDown. That would probably be third underneath, you know, Goldberg and Reigns and Cena and The Fiend as of right now heading into WrestleMania. But Daniel Bryan, you know, the word was Daniel Bryan, Drew Gulak possibly at WrestleMania. They had their deal here tonight. I'm not sure if you can really stretch another match out of this. I did see the look Daniel Bryan gave Gulak after the match that was like, whoa, you know, he really had me. Maybe he was right that he knows, you know, that he knows my weaknesses because he almost got me. And I don't know if that's an epiphany for the Daniel Bryan character and he's going to change things heading into WrestleMania, or if that's something where he, you know, wants to give Drew Gulak another opportunity because he sees something in Gulak. I don't know. But yeah, I think it shouldn't be difficult to find a spot for Daniel Bryan on WrestleMania simply because there are not a lot of major stars on SmackDown. I look at a guy like Sheamus. You know, he's been going through some of the smaller guys on SmackDown, Shorty G, Apollo Crews. He's come back and he's been pushed as a big star. You know, he's gotten some significant wins there. You know, I would I could see Sheamus and Daniel Bryan colliding at WrestleMania again, with Sheamus going after the next level up of smaller guy that is Daniel Bryan, right? I mean, he'd be the next step up of Apollo Crews and Shorty G. So, you know, I don't think that would be the worst thing for either guy. I think it would be a good way to, you know, you sort of dip Sheamus's toe back in the water on SmackDown by having him get this lower card feud, sort of warm him up a little bit, and I think he'd be ready for a star the level of Daniel Bryan at WrestleMania. But, yeah, SmackDown is not the deepest show. I think that's the bottom line of the conversation, Darrell. And so, you know, when you look at Daniel Bryan, you figure they've got to find a spot for him at WrestleMania simply because they don't have a lot of other major matches that you can think of.
Yes, and that's the whole thing. They don't have a lot of matches that they can go to. And also, you have a troublesome match with Roman Reigns and Goldberg that you don't want to lose. And just put them guys into a particular bad situation where because you don't have nothing for Daniel, and then when those hardcore fans who are going to come into Tampa see all of that stuff, they're going to react to it. So I would just figure that they do something to put them in or something like that. Or even maybe having Daniel Bryan getting a tag team and wrestling The Miz and Morrison for a tag team title match, which you got history and so much type of stuff to go upon, to build upon just in this short period of 4-week time. So I see that also. Now, lastly, it will be we had the United States title match, and I'm pretty sure probably some people would have thought that Carrillo would have won that match, maybe just because of everything that's been going on with we knowing Andrade had the suspension and stuff like that. How did you feel about that match today, which I thought was a good match because, again, this was the wrestling show today. And for people who want to see wrestling, that's what you got on this whole Elimination Chamber, which I would wish they would have built up to as the straight wrestling show. But how did you like that match, and where do you see them going with that?
Yeah, it was a straight up wrestling show. I'm not sure all the wrestling was super good. That might be the problem. I think Carrillo versus Andrade was good, and like I said when I ran down the card earlier, I could see Angel Garza getting involved. I could see all three men have some combination, whether it's a triple threat, whether it's Garza versus Andrade, whether it's Carrillo versus Garza, whether it's Carrillo versus Andrade, some combination of those three battling over the United States Championship at WrestleMania. I think that makes the most sense.
Yeah, and they seeming like they was trying to build some type of faction of maybe with these guys and stuff like that. So I want to see where they go with all of this. But tonight, like I say, tonight, like you said also, tonight was the wrestling show. And all the wrestling wasn't great, but they had good wrestling on tonight's show. And not having the bigger matches where you building the bigger storylines on here kind of affected it the most. And that's what I would ask you. Not having neither of the big champions on the show, you don't have Goldberg, you don't have Brock, you don't have those storylines going, or anything of the sort. You don't have Charlotte and the NXT champion on here. How did that affect this show as an overall in your eyes?
I think it affected it significantly, and I think you saw that effect in the lack of crowd reaction by the Philly fans. I can't get into their minds, nor would I want to get into Philly sports fans' minds. No offense, Philly sports fans, we love you. But, you know, I think that was, to a degree, a reason for their lack of reaction tonight, was that you were missing all of those stars that you mentioned, Darrell, and more. This was the definition of a secondary type of show, maintenance show, whatever you want to call it, where nothing really significantly changes for WrestleMania because so many of those big stars at WrestleMania have been kept in bubble wrap this month.
Yes, sir. And also, I think the only thing that I think this show built tonight was making that Shayna is a complete heel. I know that people was talking about how cocky Becky been acting these past few weeks and stuff like that, and how they've been promoting Shayna. I think what they did tonight with Shayna made her into the heel of the match. Now you just have to course correct how you doing, Becky, and stuff like that. And that's maybe give it a good outlook on everything tonight. But with Elimination Chamber as a whole, having none of the big total matches that you figure that's the main event matches or the top matches of the card not on this card tonight kind of hurt it. And I think coming out of tonight and going into Raw and into SmackDown, they're going to have to do a lot of stuff to start building up into WrestleMania. What do you think about that?
Well, yeah, I think so. You know what? 4 weeks is what we've got left. So we've got 4 weeks of Raw, 4 weeks of SmackDown. And really, with Rhea Ripley's involvement, 4 weeks of NXT, I guess we have to include that in there as well. Shayna Baszler still being listed as an NXT superstar, so I guess it's not out of the realm of possibility that she could still show up on that show and build up her match with Becky Lynch. But I think, that's be the driving force now. You know, Elimination Chamber, Super Showdown, all the sort of distractions from building WrestleMania are over with now. And now we've got a clear focus, and we're building to WrestleMania, and that's really the fun time of year when you've got that, you've gotten past all those other sort of road markers, and you're on to the road to WrestleMania now. So, Darrell, always a pleasure to hear from you. Thank you for your call, and we look forward to hearing from you again soon.
No problem, Gray. You have a great night.
Thank you. You do the same, sir. We only have one caller on hold right now. It's the 305 area code who we'll be going to in a few moments. If you'd like to get on the phone lines and express your opinion about Elimination Chamber, ask any questions. 515-605-9345 is the number to call. Make sure to press 1 if you would like to talk. This is Greg Parks, Wrestling Torch columnist here on Wrestling Night in America for March 8th, 2020, as we break down the Elimination Chamber card. I'll go to a few emails before we go to 305. The first is from Praneel. This is not Elimination Chamber specific, but it's worth throwing out there. WWE's manipulation to get Roman Reigns cheered has worked on me, at least. I'd rather have him as champion than Goldberg, so WWE wins there. I'm afraid most people will see through this and react more negatively than WWE would like. The boo birds during this match will be deafening, in my opinion, unless Reigns and Goldberg can win over the crowd in the ring. All I would like to see is a glimpse of some thought put into the match from Roman and Goldberg to ultimately get Roman over as a babyface. This should be the end game, in my opinion. I've lost hope of Roman turning heel, so I'm not even going down that route. If Roman were to pull off some new moves that aren't in his current repertoire, that would show me that he tried to win over the naysayers. It's about time he starts caring to win them over. Please tell me you see Goldberg and Reigns caring enough to tell a story in the ring and not just punching their time cards for another day at the job. Thank you for that email, Praneel. The story is not really up to Roman and Goldberg. That's up to the agents and up to the writers and up to Vince McMahon. So those are the ones we're looking at for this. You've got to expect that with Goldberg being involved, it's not going to be a 20, 25-minute title match that we tend to see at WrestleMania. This could be a get-in, get-out match. And if that's the case, putting Reigns over strong, I think, would be the right way to go if you're going to have him win. It's going to be interesting to see the part Goldberg plays in the build-up to WrestleMania, because he's been booed at some of the shows. So I guess you can expect maybe the possibility of him being booed at WrestleMania. Now, will they boo both Goldberg and Roman Reigns as they did at WrestleMania 20 with Goldberg and Lesnar? Will they boo Goldberg and will they cheer Roman Reigns? That's a possibility as well. But I think in the build-up, knowing that Roman Reigns is going to be a babyface, and as Praneel mentioned, he's probably not going heel, will he be positioned more as the babyface with Goldberg as the heel? And I think that's one of my questions that I have that I'll be looking out for in the WrestleMania buildup is, you know, how is this split going to happen? Is it going to be the newer fans cheering for Reigns and the older fans cheering for Goldberg? Is that kind of how WWE is going to position this? Or will they position it as Goldberg playing slightly more heel with Reigns as the conquering babyface? So that's going to be really interesting to the buildup. It's going to be a kind of an intriguing match for maybe some of the wrong reasons, but you know, I get why people want to accuse Roman Reigns of kind of phoning it in and, not caring, but I don't think that's the case. I think this is just the character he's playing, whether it's on advice from WWE management of how to play this character or whether it's Roman's own way of playing this character, his own read on this character, because he is, you know, if you've ever seen him outside of the WWE environment, he's much looser and he seems more affable than this Roman Reigns character. So, you know, I don't think it's that he's not caring. I just think it's that this is his take on the character, that it's kind of a cool customer. And that can come off sometimes as not caring. So, if this is WWE going with Roman Reigns again as the top star on SmackDown with a title win over Goldberg at WrestleMania, you would like to see maybe something new. I think you could make the argument of him putting something new in his repertoire for this. To kind of throw, if nothing else, to throw a bone to those fans who always boo him and always, complain about his limited moveset or what have you. But, I go back to the John Cena episode of the Ruthless Aggression special on the WWE Network, and, he at some point kind of gave up winning over all the fans. He knew that he wasn't going to do that, and he was focused on winning over his fans and keeping them his fans. And you wonder if that advice hasn't trickled down to Roman Reigns at this point, too, that, hey, there's going to be some people that are just never going to like you and never going to like that character, and you're not going to win them over. So, don't try to play the character outside of yourself to win those people over. Just keep the people who are on your side, the women, the young kids, some males, and keep them on your side. And that may be advice he's getting, too. So, but it's an intriguing match for a lot of reasons. Heading into WrestleMania. Another email is from Eli. He says, "Hey, Greg, I was recently thinking about wrestlers' finishers and signature moves. So many moves are repeated, mostly because wrestling has been around so long. This is very rarely a great new – there is very rarely a great new move that isn't already a derivation or something else unless you just do it from the top rope or a flip with it. But can you think of someone – who had inherited or copied a move more recently and does the move better? I think Montez Ford's frog splash over maybe RVD's, but his sell was iconic. Of course, the RKO has taken a life of its own over the diamond cutter, which itself was the ace crusher. Does the personality doing the move matter in its iconic status, i.e. Dolph Ziggler with the super kicks versus the Young Bucks? Along those same lines, how are fans to believe that one person whose move is their finisher can end a match, but someone who just uses it as a transition move can't even get a two count? For example, destroyers, super kicks, stunners, etc. Thank you in advance." Thank you, Eli. And that's something that I wish I had read this email earlier so that I had time to actually think about this. Kevin Owens taking the stunner now from Steve Austin. I wouldn't say he does it better than Steve Austin did, but that's certainly a move that's now been recycled with Austin retired for good. And with nobody else really in wrestling doing that move, I think it was safe for Kevin Owens to claim domain over it or dominion over it. That's a really interesting question. I'd have to really think about it once you go through the movesets. I mean, you see guys like Buddy Murphy who are obviously watching New Japan and taking some moves from those guys and things like that. Again, probably not doing it better just because they haven't had as much experience with it, but you do see that. And as for the second part of the question, how are fans to believe that one person whose move is a finisher can end a match with someone who just uses it as a transition move? Yeah, that's the thing. The problem is there are a finite number of moves, as Eli mentioned. Moves aren't really being created, although I have to say there are some, I think, that are some moves that I think are being created, and wrestlers are still being creative about that sort of thing. They might not all be finishers. They may be just sort of transitions, either that or I'm just not watching enough wrestling and these moves are being used elsewhere. But there is a finite number of moves that you can do, and hundreds of thousands of wrestlers out there having thousands of matches and hundreds of them each day. So, the chances of repeating moves are pretty high. Canadian destroyers and things like that, and, there's the overuse of that. That's a whole other tangent. But I think it's realistic to think that some wrestlers' moves have more impact and are more deadly, colloquially speaking, than wrestlers doing that same move. I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility for, say, the Young Bucks to end a match with a super kick, but the Usos maybe don't. Maybe the Usos' super kick is not as powerful, as deadly. It's kind of like a football team. You can see the and yes, I'll use XFL teams as my example here. You can see the Tampa Bay Vipers run an inside zone run and get 10 yards on it. And you can see another team run an inside zone and not do well. Well, there are a lot of different moving parts in this, But the bottom line is one team executed a lot better than the other. And I think that's the same in wrestling. Sometimes moves are just executed better than the other, and that's why they get pins off of them. You know, in the kayfabe world, I'm trying to come up with an excuse why that's the case. So that's kind of my reasoning for things like that. Back to the phones now, to the 305 area code. 305, you are on Wrestling Night in America. Is this DJ from Miami?
Unfortunately, it is.
Unfortunately? What are you talking about? DJ from Miami's with us. Unless he's got some opinions about the Elimination Chamber show that are negative.
It was okay. Too crazy. I just don't understand how we got here. Like, just because John Cena comes in, just because, you know, it doesn't mean, you know, this guy should lose his belt. I don't know. Let me see if I can explain it to you. Don't you think, in real way, because you've been doing this a long time, don't you think that Cena can dance a little better than Roman and can hold Goldberg a little better compared to, like, Goldberg and two big guys? I understand that. Everybody wants that, but it's going to be clunky, and we know that. Cena's going to give Goldberg a little more of a match compared to Roman.
I can see that, and I can see, you know, just for the, you know, I think Cena versus Goldberg in some ways is more interesting as far as generationally, you know, than Roman Reigns versus Goldberg. From match quality standpoint, I think it may be a push at this point. You know, I think you make a point that Reigns is bigger than Cena, so would Goldberg have a better match against a somewhat smaller opponent? Not that Cena is small by any stretch of the imagination. You know, I think Goldberg is going to have his match regardless. I don't really think for his formula, the slight difference in size between Cena and Reigns is going to matter all that much to match quality. I think we could see a Cena-Goldberg match at some point down the line. I don't think that's out of the realm of possibility. Doing it at WrestleMania is tough because they're both part-timers, so who's getting the rub? You know, if you want to do a match at WrestleMania, you'd like to have, I think ideally, at least in my opinion, if you're going to bring back a legend or a part-timer like a Goldberg or like a John Cena, you would like to see them wrestle someone on the main roster who can get that rub off of it and who can carry, you know, some of the segments. And I know that's not always the case. We had Triple H versus Batista last year, so it's not always the case. But, I mean, if you're, you know, Roman Reigns and you want to put the title on him and maybe you want to strap the rocket back to him on SmackDown after WrestleMania, is it going to be more impactful for him to beat a legend like Goldberg for the title or to beat a character like The Fiend for the title? And, you know, right or wrong, WWE's decision was it would be more impactful for Reigns to beat Goldberg.
Right. No, I understand. You understand what I mean, Mike. I just feel like Cena's been there longer and, you know, and he's kind of a little better wrestler, not too much better than Roman, I guess, who can carry him. That's all. But it's so weird that, to me, it's so strange how they did this. Like, it feels so weird that, you know, Brock and Goldberg's champions, like, that's so weird. Like, why didn't they figure out this a long time ago? Then they could have clashed at, like, SummerSlam or something crazy for the, you know, belt versus belt, you know, something, you know what I'm saying? Like, they pushed this guy so fast and, what I'm saying is this, like, okay, I understand that Roman's going to get the belt, right? Okay, great. Now, what's going to happen? He's not going to – I feel like what should happen is The Fiend should just come back and get it because that's what the people want. Like, I don't think that there's really anybody else right now except, what, AJ, you know, who's going to really get the belt. So I feel like I don't know. Do you think that eventually
Roman Reigns? Roman Reigns,
yes,
after
the
WrestleMania?
Fiend.
After.
Yes. Because I don't feel like he's going to hold it for that long of a time.
Well, AJ's on Raw, so that's. I think we can throw that out as a possibility.
AJ. I meant Brian. I'm sorry, I said AJ. I'm sorry, I meant Brian.
Okay.
Like,
I thought that might have been the case.
I meant Brian. But, like, yeah. You know what I mean? Like, I just don't see anybody, and that's what the fans want. Like, I feel like, I don't know, they really pushed it kind of strangely.
Well, here's the thing, DJ.
You know what I mean?
I think if you look at what they could have done, okay, so you could have had Roman Reigns versus The Fiend for the title at WrestleMania. Reigns goes over Corbin at Super Showdown to set it up, somehow ends up as a number one contender. The Fiend goes over Goldberg somehow at Super Showdown to retain the title. Now you've got Reigns and The Fiend. Okay, at WrestleMania. That's fine. Or the other option is you do Roman Reigns. He beats Goldberg for the title at WrestleMania. The Fiend goes over John Cena at WrestleMania. Now you've got Roman Reigns, who just beat a legend in Goldberg for the title. You've got The Fiend, who just beat a legend in John Cena. And now they're both kind of at the apex. And now they're fighting and they're feuding with each other after WrestleMania. And
that's
that gives you an after WrestleMania.
That's what I feel like is going to happen, you know?
Okay.
I don't know why.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But I just feel like it's bunched up in the beginning. And it shouldn't have did that. I think they should have went like a little different paths. You know what I mean? But to lead up to where they are. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah. That's kind of what I talked about, the different path they could have taken. And this goes back to what I talked about with Darrell is, you know, I think you kind of pointed it out. I mean, who else is there besides Daniel Bryan and The Fiend, you know, to face Roman Reigns?
Yeah.
SmackDown is kind of short on top stars. Now, we'll see after WrestleMania if anyone from NXT gets moved to SmackDown, because we've seen in years past, although NXT wasn't considered a main roster then, I'm not sure if it's still considered a main roster now, but we've seen a lot of moves go to SmackDown and Raw from NXT in the days and weeks after WrestleMania. So there are some top guys in NXT who could be rotated out onto the main roster to make room for more new top guys in NXT. And I'm wondering if maybe a couple of them, one or two, could be better served on SmackDown as top guys at this point, you know? I wonder if that might be the case.
I don't know what it's, you know what I mean? It's just so weird how they went that way. But my last thing is that, real quick, before we move on to the second thing, is that, do you think, like, going into the Showdown, I really do think because it wasn't Goldberg's, like, you know, I think Goldberg feels better in the States or blah, blah, blah. I think that they should have played around, and I think somehow The Fiend should have won. And then going into WrestleMania, I think they should have fought for real, because I feel like people were going to feel a little better about that. I feel like they got ripped off because it was too quick. You know what I mean? You understand what I'm saying? So I feel like that would have been a little better going into that way. And then later on with the Roman thing. But I think that, you know, this the path they went, it's just so strange. It just because Cena wants to do a match out of the blue, like, come on, man. Like, I just don't like how they did that. Just throw them out of the blue, like, and then let's put a, you know, a wrench in everything. That's so stupid just because it's Cena,
well,
you know, and they're going to boo him anyway.
DJ, I think that the premise for the change might be faulty. I'm not sure if it was John Cena who came in and wanted to do a match and blew everything up. It seemed like WWE, you know, Goldberg, it was more Goldberg, it was ready to do a match at WrestleMania, and WWE looked at the card and maybe they felt The Fiend wasn't where he needed to be as champion to really mean something for Roman Reigns to beat him. So maybe they felt Goldberg would have been a better person for that. I just don't think assuming John Cena was the one who blew things up because he wanted a match at WrestleMania, I don't know if that's necessarily the case.
I kind of understand that, because I feel like with The Fiend and Bryan, it could have been a little better. Like, I feel like it should have been a little better. Like, I don't understand, like, how they did it was kind of weird, too. You know what I'm saying? And I just understand
what
you meant right there.
The Fiend is a tough character. And I think Bryan got the best matches he could out of The Fiend. But, it could have been better, just like most things in wrestling.
Right, of course. So, and then, I guess moving on. But you understand what I'm saying. So, hopefully, we'll see what happens. But, you know what? This is what I want. I want this. I want Roman to be champion, and I want something to happen. Maybe at SummerSlam, Keith Lee bumps into him or something. Yeah, I want something like that. I mean, if Roman has the belt and they've been going at it, you know what I'm saying, at SummerSlam, a Rumble, I think that would have been pretty funnier. You know what I'm saying? Just to get that little rub on him, because he is going to go to SmackDown. I feel like, compared to Raw. So, because they're going to need somebody. So,
and he's one of the guys you could look at.
Yeah, we'll see, but I guess we'll move on to a crazy question. I'm being serious about this. It's going crazy, this virus crap. Do you think, because we do have a month, like you said, do you think they'll do it with an empty arena? Like, seriously, because of, we don't know how from now to a month, we don't know. I mean, it's going crazy.
Yeah. Well,
what do you think?
Do you think he will, quote unquote,
do that? Or you think Vince will never do
Vince will only do something like that if he's mandated to by the government. I think that Vince's MO has always been, let the fans decide. Let the fans make the decision. If they're comfortable coming, they'll come. If not,
around the world, mostly from the UK. You know that. You know what I'm saying? So, and then think about it. The next day on Raw, like, come on. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm kind of freaked out, like, a little bit, because people are coming from different around the world. So
hopefully those people, even though they have WrestleMania tickets and they've paid a fair amount of money for them,
they're going to really test these dudes coming in. I mean, they're going to need the dudes coming
DJ,
in.
DJ,
them.
You got
to
let me finish, man. DJ,
know,
you got to let me finish. I know, but let me finish here. I can't listen to you and talk at the same time. So, you know, some of these countries, you know, are quarantining the people and they're telling them not to travel. So either hopefully the people who are in countries where this is affecting them, hopefully they are on their own volition going to stay back if they think they might be a danger to other people. You have the governments who are saying, okay, look, you're not going to travel. We're quarantining you. I think 16 million in Italy are being quarantined now. So, you know, that's the deal. And I mean, a lot can change in a month. So it's so hard to say, but I just, you know, given Vince's history, it's hard for me, and knowing what WrestleMania means to the company, knowing what it means to the bottom line, I think only if the government steps in and says, hey, either don't run the show or run the show with no fans, whatever the case may be, I think ultimately it's going to be the government stepping in if something changes. I don't think Vince is going to make that decision himself.
Well, they also have access, too, that day before. So,
yeah.
You know, and they're, you know, everybody's close together. So I was just wondering, because we both live in Florida, so I was just, like, curious what you thought of that, because, you know what I mean? I can't find hand sanitizer. I went to, like, four places. So, and alcohol, it's crazy. You know what I mean? So I was just wondering.
I made mention to a friend today. It's like, you know, when the hurricane comes through, I mean, you know this, when it's hurricane season, that when we get a hurricane threat, you know, all of a sudden, you know, the water's gone.
Like,
there are certain products that just fly off the shelves, and it's kind of like that for an illness, unfortunately.
I went to Target. It looked like somebody just took their arm and went with all the soap. That's what it looks like. And
you
then you go online, it's like $400 for one bar. Like, what the heck? It's crazy. That's why I was just curious, because I feel like I'm kind of, like, freaked out, because, like, I have friends who are going to WrestleMania, you know, and, like, they don't know, like,
it's a legitimate
tickets or, you know. I was just curious what
it's
you're thinking
question.
And what you guys are, you know. Are you guys going to do an article about that? About the WrestleMania
about
thing
what?
And blah, blah, blah. About the virus and all that stuff, or
maybe if there's something to report on, we may do it. Nothing's happened yet, so there's really nothing to write about yet.
I was just curious what you guys are thinking, because I didn't know what you guys were thinking on your end. Okay.
Okay.
Are you going?
Yeah. Probably not. You know, I had kind of thought about going. And thought about trying to get a press pass to go there, but now with the virus, I mean, I'm kind of like you. It's kind of scary, you know. It's not something you want to jump right into, especially because between now and 4 weeks from now, 28 days, a lot can change. And so I don't really want to make any plans, not knowing what things are going to be like then.
Yeah, I was just, you know, I wanted to touch base with you on that, because it's in Florida, so you know, we lived in the floor. And then my last thing is that the Baszler, real quick, dude, that was like some Brock Lesnar crap. Like, man, I was like, whoa, dude, they're pushing it like Lesnar. Do you, it's like a China thing. Who, like, do you, I mean, I feel like, I don't know, is that true? Like, is Becky going to take time off if, or do you think she'll definitely win the belt? But, like, who next after Becky can really handle her except Rousey?
Yeah.
Like, she went through Natalya like it was nothing. Like, how Natalya was all pumped up, she went through Natalya like nothing. I was like, whoa. So, like, where's this chick going? Like, do you think, like, do you, like, she's pretty like China. Do you, you're not, I hope they're not going to do some weird thing like make her to, you know, Intercontinental champion or something. You know, I don't know. I'm scared. Because she was pretty aggressive tonight.
Well, yeah. I think when I talked about the match, I kind of ran down the reasons it needed to be that way. But I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen at WrestleMania with Baszler and Lynch. And I think that's one of the interesting things. You know, there's rumors about Lynch taking time off. There's, you know, if Baszler wins, who does she face? It could be credible. Beyond Becky Lynch, because once you beat the top dog and you've portrayed yourself as being able to run through the entire or almost the entire Raw Women's
just
division
like
as they showed
like
tonight,
that.
You know, who's left?
Yeah.
Who's left that can be
yeah.
incredible?
It's like
Brock
Lesnar. It's
back.
Like a Lesnar thing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you've got some options. You've got if
so...
Ronda Rousey you wanted to answer the call and face Shayna Baszler. You've got Nia Jax, who's going to be ready to come back from injury soon. You know, she could be a credible challenger to Shayna Baszler. So there are some kind of outside-the-box options right now. But, yeah, that's going to be an interesting result at Mania.
I like that Asuka really hold her own, though. Like, I feel like hopefully they can go at it again because they were pretty good. So
sure.
We'll see what happens. I was just wondering, like, what you thought of that because, like, it was kind of Brock Lesnar-y with that. You never see
definitely.
That in a really long time, you know? So, like,
right.
Hopefully they won't do what they do with Lesnar with her, you know? Like, do you think they're going to give her a piece, like a handler so she can talk or so they can talk for her?
No, I think she's fine. No, I think she's fine on her own.
Okay. I was just curious. I guess that's it. I just don't know what we're going to do at the WrestleMania. I'm kind of figuring out what we're going to do. We don't know.
The unknown.
Yeah.
Yep.
I keep on.
All right, DJ, thanks
for
listening to
me. Let me ask you for real. Do you think that I hear, I don't know why, but I do hear from the grapevine that Stone Cold's come back over and over again. Is that true?
Yeah,
he's going to go with Lesnar?
That's been the rumor since he retired. So I
doubt
anything
said
changed.
That, like last year, and he said he's been really training.
Yeah.
So I don't know. We'll see him.
You know,
I guess we'll see him this next weekend. That's what I heard.
The side effect of Edge and Daniel Bryan coming back from injuries that were supposed to retire them is now you start hearing the whispers about Steve Austin, whose injury was also supposed to retire him. And Austin has said over and over again that he doesn't want to come back if he's going to be a shell of himself. So I really don't feel like he would come back.
That. That's why I'm telling you that.
Yeah, he'll be on Raw on March 16th, so I think we'll get a better picture there.
Yeah, I was just telling you because I feel like, you know, because of the Edge thing, that's what I heard for the rumor. I didn't know you heard that. That's what I was asking real quick. But I guess I'll talk to you Sunday.
All right, DJ, thanks for calling in. Appreciate it.
Thanks. I'll talk to you soon.
All right, phone lines are open, 515-605-9345. We'll get to two more emails, and we'll look at what the phone lines look like. And if we're empty, we'll wrap up for the night. So this email is from Brian. He says, who is putting out the best pay-per-views right now? WWE main roster, like tonight, NXT, TakeOvers, or AEW? If you could only watch one company's pay-per-view in a given month, which one would you choose and why? I think it's hard to choose between NXT and AEW. I think they both put on really good shows. AEW's was really good this last week. And it's also hard because AEW has fewer to look back on than NXT. I mean, my personal preference is NXT, but I think NXT and AEW are both doing an equally good job of putting on pay-per-views. I think the main roster, as evidenced by tonight, is lagging well behind. Of course, they're serving different audiences. You know, AEW is serving a different audience than NXT, is serving a different audience than the main roster of WWE. And they're serving different masters. You know, we saw tonight's Elimination Chamber lacking so many top stars. That wouldn't happen in AEW. That probably wouldn't even happen in NXT, although they are a little tighter with the cuts that they make for the shows and who makes the cut. But, you know, this was simply a show to get them to WrestleMania. And if, you know, you already had your WrestleMania spot locked down, you weren't going to be on this show. So there are different masters being served with these shows, different purposes for these shows. So it is not always an apples-to-apples comparison. But personally, I would choose NXT. I think they and AEW are probably pretty even when it comes to quality and consistently delivering. And our final question tonight is from Paul. He says, Greg, I don't mind that Shayna was so dominant, but it felt like a waste of a chamber match. If they were going this route with her, why not just give her the Rumble win? I sort of agree with that. The thing is, the roles would just be reversed. I mean, you'd have Baszler win the Rumble, look dominant there, just like she did tonight, and you'd have Charlotte Flair win the Women's Elimination Chamber to get a shot at Rhea Ripley. So I don't think it changes all that much if you did it that way, unless you had a different idea for how Charlotte was going to challenge Rhea Ripley. You know, Baszler would have been my pick to win the Rumble. But I also think if you don't have her win the Rumble, having her win an Elimination Chamber match is the right way to go. Because you want her to look dominant. And this is the reasoning I threw out earlier in the show is you want Baszler to look dominant because to a lot of fans, she's still new. To a lot of fans, they're looking at her with a skeptical eye as, you know, who's this new woman coming in to face our top star, Becky Lynch? So you really need to put her over strong. And maybe they felt that with Brock Lesnar being as dominant as he was during the men's Rumble, you couldn't do the same thing with Baszler in the women's Rumble. So instead, let her dominate the Elimination Chamber. Let her dominate a different environment than what Brock Lesnar did, so it's not you're repeating the same thing on the same show. And they did book Baszler as dominant here tonight, which I think they needed to do. So that's kind of my talking it out version of what I think the reasoning was for WWE to do things the way they did. Now, to kind of wrap things up tonight, we will talk a little bit about the ROH pay-per-view, which they've got coming up next week. And we will talk about here on the show, Wrestling Night in America next week. Don't forget that Wrestling Night in America every Sunday night, and usually at 8 p.m. Eastern. The last 2 weeks, we've broken that rule. Tonight, we're after the Elimination Chamber. Last week, we're on a Saturday night after AEW's pay-per-view. But next week, we are back to our regularly scheduled time, 8 p.m. Eastern, on Sunday night here on PWTorchDailyCast.com. Anytime there is a WWE pay-per-view, though, we go on the air after that show goes off the air. WrestleMania will be the next one for us in that regard. So ROH's 18th anniversary pay-per-view. It's Friday from Sam's Town in Las Vegas. Roosh versus Mark Haskins for the world title. Dragon Lee against Bandito for the ROH Television Championship. Jay Lethal and Jonathan Gresham against Marty Scurll and Flip Gordon for the tag titles. Adam Brooks against Flex. The Briscoes against Dalton Castle and Joe Hendry. Dan Moff versus Kenny King versus Shane Taylor versus Bateman for a future ROH title shot. And Nicole Savoy against Session Moth Martina in a women's bout. So looks like a pretty strong card from an in-ring point of view. Kind of looking forward to that one on Friday night. And again, we will talk about that here on Wrestling Night in America next week. And that's when you can catch us. I am Pro Wrestling Torch columnist Greg Parks. We will talk to you again next Sunday, because if it's Sunday, it's Wrestling Night in America.